Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Parenthood Podcast. When we think about the milestones in our children's lives, starting school has to be one of the biggies. And while some children can't wait to start big school, it can be an intimidating time, a time of uncertainty and feeling like a little fish in a very big pond. For some, the transition from small nursery to school is seamless, but others struggle. My Parenthood inbox is cluttered with emails about how to make this transition as simple as possible, what we as parents can do to make it easy for our children to adjust to this new environment. So I'm here today with my co-founder, Dr. Kiara Hunt. Hi, Kiara.
Morning.
And we've also got Iona Hewitt, who is a teacher and educational consultant. Iona, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's such an important topic to discuss, especially, well, we kind of think around September, but actually what we're going to talk about today is going to show that that preparation for starting a big school starts a lot earlier than the sort of weeks before the first day of school. It starts a lot earlier than that, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I've seen it from both being a mother and from being a teacher. And those preparations can start up to 2 years earlier from when they first go to nursery and are looking forward to the next step, because that's what we do in life, isn't it? We look forwards. So it's a constant topic.
Yeah.
And just to contextualise, we're talking about primary school here, which is the school children start when they're four. They may well have been at nursery school from 2 to 4. Is that right?
Yes. Some schools will have a nursery class. They will start, and that's the 3 to 4 age range, but reception is 4 to 5, and that's the normal starting point for primary school.
And the difference between that and nursery is nursery tends to be more of a play environment, whereas school is more structured. Or what's the main difference, would you say?
Reception is still very play-based. So if there is a nursery class or within nursery school, they still follow the same curriculum, the early learning goals, which goes up until the end of reception. And you're looking there at a lot of child-based learning and child-led play. It then goes into more formal learning from year one, but it's still very play-based in reception.
And is it compulsory for children to start school in reception?
By the age of 5. Okay. So some children can start in the Christmas term in reception. Schools will vary on this depending on their intake and their numbers.
But it is a great environment in which children thrive. I mean, school, yes, it can be an intimidating thing to start. And I think especially for parents, it is saying goodbye and starting that next step with your beloved children is hard. But, you know, by and large, school and the educational environment is the kind of best environment for your children to learn in and grow up in, isn't it?
Children love it. They really do. Once they've come over the first, you know, difficult steps that can be starting, I know we're about to talk about, they do love the boundaries, the safety. There's so much stimulation, the creativity and the friendships, the social side is just so important.
And they love their teacher generally, don't they?
Yes, it's a really special relationship, really special.
What do children normally feel? How have you found in your experience? You've taught loads of children who've been starting school. What's typically the attitude of children? How do they feel?
Children are generally very excited at the beginning of school. There is, of course, a lot of nervousness. Especially, to be honest though, that can come from the parents, and it's sometimes us, isn't it, that we put our own fears onto them because we're feeling so nervous about them going off to big school. And so that can sometimes, they can pick up on our little nerves, but there's always a lot of excitement and curiosity. I think especially with the first child, if it's the next child going off, then often it's wanting to keep up with a big sibling. Mm.
I remember so well going in for one of those tester days with my daughter, and she'd misunderstood me and thought that was the end of nursery and time for big school. And I remember the next day when I tried to drop her off at nursery, she's like, I'm not going back there. No, I'm going to big school now. I started yesterday. And I had to break it to her that she still had another few weeks of nursery to go before she started
big
school.
That was one of those tester days, was it, where they often have a morning, don't they, or a few hours the term before they're due to start, where they can get a bit of a feel of what the school's like. Is it worth going to those?
Definitely, they're so important. They sometimes give a couple. If you can't go to one, then try and go to the other. It is really important. And if you can't, absolutely can't get to them, then go and talk to the school, and they might be able to bring your child in for an hour at a different time. It just takes away the unknown. It takes away that scaredness. They might be able to show you where their peg is going to be, where the loo is going to be, just different bits of everyday life, because you don't know what your child's really worrying about before. And just seeing the physical environment and seeing the other happy children running around, it just allays so many fears over the summer holidays.
And it is intimidating, because if you imagine, you know, you've got your sort of social circle, even as a grown-up, and then suddenly you have to go into a totally new environment with different friends and different people. That for grown-ups would be intimidating, yet, you know, even more so if you're four, because they've obviously got a whole class load of friends, that potential friends that they haven't yet met, as well as teachers. And that must be one of the things that sort of is quite scary for them, but also exciting.
Definitely. I mean, the teachers are so expecting and so ready for that. And that first half a term, there is a huge amount done around routines, friendship, turn taking, making friends, just lots and lots of things which aren't traditionally seen as academic, to really help them settle in.
And so talking a bit about how we can prepare children in the year leading up to that first term in September of big school. So obviously academically, and I sort of use academics in the sort of broader sense of the word, but what are the expectations for children starting reception? Are they meant to have any knowledge of reading? Can they read at that stage?
Should they be able to write?
Reception teachers will take them as a blank canvas. There are no real expectations. Your reception teacher will hope that some things have been put in place by nursery or by you at home, but there is no expectation that they have to be able to do some things. And this is where children are so different, and it's very easy to compare them to your friends or to previous children you've had, and they really are so different. Things like birthdays at this time makes an almighty difference. If you have a summer-born boy, for example, as I do, and that's not saying all summer-born boys do, but they often are just much less ready to learn. They still want to be outside running around in the mud. And so you cannot compare them with each other. Mm. If we're looking at it as a general rule, if you can start to do things beforehand, like encouraging them to recognise their name, starting them writing their name, they will be doing this at nursery, but you can try and get them to do it at home a little bit. Maybe they can write a name label for you. Maybe they can help starting to try and pretend write shopping lists. Giving them opportunities to do a bit of writing can be brilliant. A lot of children, though, aren't ready to write at this stage. So it's really about developing the muscles. Lots of Play-Doh at home. Lots of exercising that muscle in between your first finger and your thumb. Play-Doh, salt dough, tweezers. You know, those sort of big clothes pegs. If you've got some clothes pegs, get them pinning things on a line, because it's all exercising them again. Making big movements, giving them a wet paintbrush so they can go outside and make big wet marks on the pavement, and just inspiring them to start mark making in different ways. Mine have all loved mazes. So that's a really good way to get them going with their fine motor skills, but encourage the big motor skills as well.
And reading to them is really important, isn't it?
So important. That bedtime story. I mean, if you can keep reading for them as long as possible, it is just wonderful, because it's in the future, it'll be that love of a good story, the plot and structure. But at this stage, it's just the vocabulary enrichment is so important. And it's a really lovely time of the day when you can sit down and curl up with a story.
And they take so much in, don't they, during that sort of bedtime reading story?
Oh, huge amount.
And then they mull over it, you know, after you've left the room. And it's.
And I think as adults, you know, we read one book and then we sort of don't read it again. But they like to read the same books over and over again. And why is that?
I think it's often comforting. They know what's coming next. Before they're able to read, it's almost like they're reading, because they know what's going to come. And I find often if I haven't read the page quickly enough, they're racing ahead with the next sentence because they've learnt it. And you're providing them there with things like sentence structure, so they know how the words come together. You're modelling a really good scaffold of the way that a story can be written in the future.
And things like numbers, recognising numbers and recognising letters. I remember someone told me before I think that he was still in nursery, of just walking down the street and getting him to look at the door numbers and recognise those and work out that...
Yeah, the numbers of the buses.
The numbers of the buses, exactly. And working out door numbers that they're going up in a sequence. And, you know, is it
definitely
one or two?
Use the environment around you the whole time. With sounds, with phonics, it's a lot before you get to school about listening and hearing them. So if you can play I spy with them as much as possible, and we all know that stage where you say I spy with mighty eye, something being with duh, and they go cat, and they're so pleased. And until they can hear that duh is for dog, it's very difficult for them to be able to start learning some sounds. So as much as you can do, one of my favourite activities I talk about a bit is going on a sound hunt. And you can put on a proper hat, you get your magnifying glass out and say, right, we're going to go around the house and find as many things as we can, starting with a k. And you walk around and you model it and you say, right, I'm going to look on the table here. There's a mug. Does that start with a k, k? And getting them to start hearing it, and they'll, you know, and really got to say mug and k, k. And listening to them, and hopefully then when you come to the cucumber or the carrot, they'll say, yes! And you can gather all the things together that they found on their sound hunt. So just lots of opportunities for listening to sounds.
And it's a lovely time to spend together, you know.
Exactly.
With your child.
And presumably then when they go into school and they start doing these sort of very gentle exercises in terms of phonics and early recognition of numbers, if they can do it and if they're familiar with it, then that in itself gives them quite a lot of confidence.
Definitely. They see themselves as a learner. And that's what's really important, is that they are enthusiastic, they're moving forward, and it just gives them an insight about what's to come and read. Some children will start reception being able to read just because they've been ready. They've taken that step at nursery, and some children won't be recognising sounds, and it just doesn't matter. Go with your child, and then when they're ready, it's such an exciting journey to start on.
I remember actually one of the teachers at my children's school said, please don't compare your children when it comes to reading. They will all learn to read, but they'll all learn to read at different times. But we've never, ever had a child that's left school not being able to read. They will all read.
Yes.
And actually, if you're sort of feeling quite insecure about your child's academic abilities this early on, that's going to be picked up on by your child. So actually much better to be positive and realise that children are all different, like humans are all different, and they will all achieve their goals at different stages.
Exactly. And they may thrive in a different area earlier on, and then the reading might catch up and the maths might take over, and it's just an ongoing journey of so many different strands.
But when we're trying to help them, we want to make sure that we're doing it right. And that's one of the things I remember being quite surprised by is that the phonics is very different now from when we were learning it. We learned abaca, and it's not is it, it's supposed to say the sound rather than the actual, it's not
so the
sound, because it's not pronounced dogger.
Yeah, exactly, the sounds have softened since it officially all changed a few years ago, and it's now a synthetic phonics program that we teach through in schools. And one of the main changes, which we've all had to get used to, is the fact the alphabet is said in a different way. And it's great, people come in saying, oh, my child knows the alphabet, they can sing A, B, C, D. And what that is those are the names of the letters. So it's brilliant. So A is the name of the letter, but the sound it makes is A. And then you've got obviously A, B, K. And then some of those sounds have been hugely change the way we say them. Not hugely changed, but it's just been altered. So you have things like s now instead of a s. So the letter S is a s. It's an elongated letter rather than a s. Or T is a t rather than a t. And I remember one of mine sounding the word pit out, and he went pitter, like pitter bread, because he'd been told that it was a t. And we had to go back and say, no, it's p it. And he was, oh, pit, like a hole. And so we then talked about it. So it's really important, if you can, you know, if your school puts on phonics evenings for you, or a way of re-educating us on how to say them, it is really important if you can say the sounds in the same way as the school does.
Yeah. And there's lots of different programs that do that, aren't there? The schools have that can teach you.
Yes, so lots of schools use different schemes, which they, in order to teach them, and they will probably direct you maybe to, there's online videos that you can watch, and there's apps that you can use in order to help you pronounce the sounds properly.
And even TV programs. I remember watching something on CBeebies, which was something about the letters.
Alpha blocks. It's great.
You know, and actually, in terms of parents watching it too with your children and then talking about it and getting ideas about how you can talk to them about constructing simple words and sounds in everyday life. So, so in terms of preparation, that sort of academically, pastorally, what can we do in terms of preparing our children for school?
I think generally encouraging their independence, because they are going to be away from you. Obviously, some will have been at nursery, and that's amazing. Some may not have been at nursery, but either way, they are going to have to become more independent because there are less adults who are devoted to them. So if you can encourage them with things like using their knife and fork properly, being able to go to the loo, wash their hands, can they get changed for PE if they need to? Can they put their shoes on when they're going out into the playground? Can they put their coat on and do up their zip? All those little things, which you can definitely start 6 months beforehand, they will just make their life so much easier if they're not panicking because it's nearly playtime and they might have to change their shoes or they might have to put a coat on, and it just makes it all a bit scarier. Whereas if those things are completely ingrained in their everyday life, it makes it a huge amount easier.
Yeah. And if they haven't gone to nursery, because not all children do, what sort of things can parents do to get their children used to being left somewhere? Or
I think if you can leave them with a family member, if you've got friends with a child the same age, maybe they can start just having half an hour with someone, maybe while you pop out to the shops or do something, so they get used, as you say, and just build up slowly the fact that you're not there in every moment of their lives, because that can be quite a shock for them otherwise.
Because school is a long day. School is 5 days of full days, really, 9 till 3 normally.
Yes.
So if they've been at nursery before, would you advise them, having done a few full days at nursery?
I mean, it can often be a real change. Some people try and do it, but in general, they find then reception so much more tiring. There's something about that shift to reception. It is just an incredibly tiring year. And that first half a term, I remember one of mine coming back on a Friday afternoon, lying on the floor and just sobbing. And I said, "What's wrong?" He just said, "I'm just so tired." And there was just no reason for it. Nothing had upset him. He was just genuinely completely wiped out. And it was a real lesson to try and cut down things after school, no after school clubs, and just try and keep them as calm and quiet around that those first few weeks when they're readjusting.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today. I remember someone saying to me, you know, when your child starts school, trying to take a couple of days off work, because it's just suddenly a lot to organise and a lot to get ready. And you want to feel like you're in control and not out of control in order to get your child feeling as positive as possible about it. So I guess you're right. Just trying to make those 2 weeks around the beginning of school as quiet as they possibly can be for both parents as well as children.
It's a big change for everybody, not just the child.
It's a huge change, I find, in terms of organisation.
Yeah, you get a whole load of information from the school in email form or as a pack, don't you? Lots to take in.
Yes.
The new
and it seems really complicated. And is you know, games on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and which shoes do they need? And, you know, it's the kind of thing where I read emails and then I haven't taken any of it in and I have to reread it. And then 10 minutes later, I've forgotten it again. And it's
little things. I find like having a proper timetable stuck up somewhere that everyone can see. I mean, I have mine on the back of the door. So I, the last thing I do before I read the house is read it and remember, because invariably you've forgotten the recorder for Recorder Club, or you have forgotten the PE kit or the swimming kit or whatever it is on that day. And every school will have set things coming in. And that then I find flusters your child. If they're the only one there without having got, I mean, gosh, we've all done it. And I've forgotten things so many times. But I do find if you have a proper timetable stuck up, it can help.
Yeah, I did that, and that made a huge difference. I think being organised, when you start school, your day suddenly is not your own anymore. You have to follow the timetable of the school, and being organised in that lead up to nine or whenever your child starts school, so important. You're giving yourself more time than you think, getting organised, getting that timetable up, getting breakfast things out the night before.
Putting out the school uniform the night before.
Yeah.
That can be tricky because some schools don't have a uniform. Yeah. So if they don't, again, having the conversation about what they are going to wear and try and make it set in stone that what we have chosen, if they don't have a school uniform, is what you have the night before, because otherwise that can add a whole level of negotiations the next morning.
Yeah, and lunchboxes, if you're making lunchboxes, having decided what they're going to have and pack it as much as possible the night before.
Presumably in that sort of lead up to the starting term, do the class lists get shared? Is it possible for parents to kind of get in touch with other parents and maybe organise play dates with other children so that your child can potentially make a few friends of children who will be in his class or her class?
Definitely. I mean, it depends on the school. Some schools do, some schools don't. But if you get in touch with the school, you might be able to say which street you're on. If there's someone really close, are you able to link up with them? You might know through the nursery, because quite often if they are at nursery, they go on together. But I would definitely recommend, even if it doesn't need to be lots of play dates, it can literally be a play in the park. But again, it's a familiar face on that first day that you can pick out of the crowd, say, oh, look, there's, you know, whoever it is.
And then you mentioned earlier these settling in mornings that most schools now organise in the sort of weeks before school starts. And they're really worth making a real effort to do, aren't they, in terms of your child's confidence?
They're definitely worth it, because it just takes the fear away from it, because it is an unknown. It is a completely new experience for them. And in the same way, I would walk the school run with them a couple of times in the summer holidays, because also just so you know how long it takes, you're not rushing in case you're late. And it just makes it part, they know what they're doing already. So if you can walk the school run with them on the way to their settling day, it almost gives you a pre-taste of any problems that there could be. And then once they're actually there, it takes away the worry of where their peg might be, where the loo is, and where the actual physical layout of the classroom is, what it looks like.
And so emotionally, what can we do to prepare our children? Because it's quite an emotional time, I think, for parents as well as children.
Probably more so for parents.
Definitely. I think a lot there is about the way we talk about it. It's very easy to be not negative about it, but say, oh, you know, I feel like I'm going to miss you when you go to school. And it's meant to be a real positive that we're saying that, but we're just putting our emotions onto them. So if you can talk about it, just an incredible, this is just so exciting. I wish I was you going back. Those first couple of weeks are just fantastic. I can't wait to see what your classroom looks like. Oh, I've heard there's some brilliant children going into your class. You're just the luckiest person. And if you can, ham it up a bit and just be really positive and not point out any of the negatives. Of course, if they talk to them about it, don't dismiss their worries and their emotions and talk them through. But just putting a gently positive spin on everything. So you're setting them up with as much cheerfulness and positivity as beforehand. I find there's so many good books out there now on starting school. So if you can have, I don't know, there's Topsy and Tim ones and Peppa Pig. I mean, if they have a particular sort of character they like, there will be a starting school one with it. And there's other general good ones. And that can often help if you read two or three different ones of those. And then it's quite easy to talk about any fears through about a character rather than being your fears. You say, oh, do you think Topsy's worrying about anything about starting school? And then you'll quite often find your child will come out, but they haven't had to look at the fear as their own. They can put it onto a character, and then you can have quite a safe discussion about the worry.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then sort of counting down in terms of the summer holidays before, so they've sort of said goodbye to nursery if they're at nursery, and then you've got quite a long summer holiday before school starts. What can you do to ensure that all those skills they've learnt in that last term of nursery and that independence and all of those skills that they've fostered aren't lost in the sort of long 6-week holiday before they start school?
I think really those pastoral things we talked about, so the clothes, getting them confident, changing the knife and fork, the shoes, those are all really important to make sure are really cemented over the summer holidays. I would do things like trying on their school uniform as well, so that they feel happy and comfortable in that, so nothing itches, you know, just beforehand. I'd probably, you know, in those last few weeks, if they have gone to nursery, I'd go and talk to their nursery teachers so that you can find out where they are and find out what they recommend exactly. Because if your child is happy and beginning to read, then maybe it might be appropriate for them to start looking at a few books. If they want to practice some sounds, the nursery can point out to you a few sounds that you could be practicing. That awareness that we talked about looking around you in the environment, lots of I Spy, lots of sound hunts, maybe trying to stretch their concentration a tiny bit, sitting down and playing a game for 10, 15 minutes, seeing if you can get them to focus for a little bit longer, but then not worrying if they're not at all either. Things like playing games, snakes and ladders, which is brilliant for number recognition. Any game with a dice is also fantastic. If you can get them turn-taking, waiting, being polite, if you look at things like the early learning goals, there's a huge amount around waiting respectfully. Is it your turn? How do we play a game? And those social skills. So it's actually not even the academics you're really looking at before, the traditional academics. You're really thinking about the social side and making that as easy as possible as they fit in.
Yeah, and then the morning that school starts, how that's always such a big morning, and very often It's the parents that haven't slept the night before. Presumably, too, the children don't sleep that well, but it's really important that they're having a good night's sleep, isn't it?
Oh, and if you can start a week before, because it's so easy in the summer holidays, isn't it? Everyone's out playing till later and bedtime gets later and it's lovely, but in order to change a sleep pattern, you can't just do it the night before. So if a couple of weeks or 10 days before you can start trying to get them in bed earlier, it will make a huge difference, because then they will get used to the fact they actually, really, if they can be in bed by 7, I mean, that's always the pipe dream, isn't it? But if we can get them in bed that little bit earlier, then they'll be used to it by the night before school. And probably not talking it up too much the night before, trying to keep your bedtime routine as smooth and normal as possible, talking about anything that's worrying and then sticking them to bed. And then, you know, if they don't sleep, it's not the end of the world, but just keeping it as calm as, you know, you can, and just trying to hide the fears that you've got and just show a gentle excitement. This is a natural and wonderful step. And then when they wake up, trying to get them to eat a really healthy and nutritious, if possible, non-sugary breakfast, because then that will set them up really well for the day, especially if they'll be having school, you know, school lunches, and they may be a bit uncertain about that type of food. So if you can start them off with a really full tummy, that helps.
Yeah, because actually, you know, if you're thinking about feeding them breakfast before they go in, and then they probably have a snack mid-morning, don't they, most children?
Fruit. They always tend to have fruit in reception available to them throughout the day.
Yeah, so but, you know, then they get lunch at 12, so it's still quite a long time where they're not eating. So I know with my children, breakfast tends to take an hour, because it's a time when I just really want them to eat lots, and it's nice to have that time. So I get up at 6:30, just so that we have quite a nice, chilled, relaxed morning before they go to school.
I think time is so important. Giving yourself more time than you think you need by at least 30 minutes makes for so much more of a relaxed experience of the morning for everyone, for you, but also for the children. I remember doing that consciously, and it really changed the dynamic around breakfast time.
Well, because the problem is, as soon as you're rushing, I find, you know, your temper frays a little bit. And what's worse is, you know, it's your fault because you haven't left enough time and you end up getting snappy, and it just becomes, you know, it's difficult. It's that thing that, if possible, can you get to the school 10 minutes early so they can have a nice play in the playground with their friends, and they've settled in and they're in the right frame of mind to then come calmly into the classroom. Most classrooms, most reception classrooms, will have a bit of a routine. They'll be finding their name and putting it somewhere, or they'll be writing their name up on a board. And then it's just a really nice seamless link into doing that, and then straight into an activity. So it works really well if you can have that calm sort of integration to the start of the classroom. And I know my children have done it so many times, but I've done something quite annoying, you know, in 2 minutes before arriving at school, but having to swallow it and think, if it's that important, I'll bring it up later, but not having an argument about something just before you arrive at school. Because if you drop off an emotional child, it's just not a good start for the day for them to then resettle and refocus.
And when you're with your sort of teacher hat on, when you were there, that teacher in the classroom, and you saw the children arriving, they normally have a window of 20 minutes to arrive, do they? How does it work?
So most schools open the playground quarter of an hour or so. I mean, that ranges, but half an hour before class starts, so they can come in. I mean, obviously your child is still very much your responsibility and is with you, but they quite often run around a bit with their friends, and then whether it's time, some schools line up and then come in. Quite a lot of reception classes there, you can just sort of wander straight on in, and then different reception classes do it in different ways. Sometimes parents are encouraged to stay for 10 minutes and then off you go. Sometimes it's just once or twice a week, so it's really worth finding out what the routine is, because if it's a special morning where you're able to stay, then it's great if you can. Obviously with work that can be really difficult, but if you know that on a Friday morning there's a bit of extra time to stay and therefore you can manoeuvre hours around so that you can just stay for those 10 minutes, that can be really helpful.
And did you notice that the children who had a bit more time in the playground in the morning were more relaxed in the classroom or less anxious, whereas the ones coming in late and rushing, I mean, does that really affect them once they get into the classroom?
I'd say it has an effect. It's not a huge issue, but it can have an effect, and it doesn't need to be very long. It can literally be 2 minutes. Mm. It's just the act of not rushing, which is the bit, because if you're racing down the ramp, you know, automatic, your heart's going faster, you're breathless, and you're just coming in a bit later. Whereas if it can just be a smooth way in, and I don't know, my children quite like being the first one in to do something. And so they can sometimes be like, oh, I'm the first one in, I get to choose which activity I'm doing. And they can point something out to you and they get a bit more attention from the teacher as they come in.
And I remember it took me about 5 years to work this out, but my children often went to like birthday parties and hated it. And I realised that if I was the first person there and if we were there 5 minutes early, they significantly enjoyed it significantly more than if we sort of rocked up towards the end and then there was this crazy kind of adrenaline fest going on. So, and I'm sure the same applies for school.
Definitely.
That's saying goodbye on the first day. I mean, you just have to take a look at Instagram at the beginning of September, and there's sort of more tears from parents than there often are with children. What's the best way to negotiate that saying goodbye, especially if you know you have a child that maybe isn't so good at saying goodbye or doesn't find it so easy to say goodbye?
I mean, you're going to have to pre-warn them if they haven't been to nursery that you are going to leave them. You know, don't leave that as a shock for the first day that you're not actually going to be there. And obviously not to the day before. So in the weeks before, if they haven't been left before, you're going to need to warn them that they are leaving. A lot of schools do a more staggered start. So for the first week, it's sometimes just to lunch or even just before lunch. So it's a shorter amount of time and it builds up, which works really well. When it comes to the actual act of saying goodbye, I think it's just being really positive. I'm so proud of you. This is such an exciting day. You are going to have a wonderful time. And that's that enforcement that you will have a wonderful time. A big hug and a smile. Check that they're doing, you know, check that they're by an activity. Check they're doing something nice. A big hug and a smile and off you go. If they then attach themselves like a koala to you, it obviously becomes a lot harder. And at that moment, you know, obviously give them another hug. Say you're going to be brilliant. And then if it carries on being a problem, then obviously enlist an adult. And you will have so many adults in reception those first few weeks. There will be lots. So if there was someone, I'm afraid, there to prize them off you. In my experience, there's obviously exceptions. They will stop crying 2 minutes. I mean, it's never more than 2 minutes.
After you've gone.
And they've known you've gone. I mean, the biggest plea from every reception teacher is please do not linger. You know, and it's awful. But if you can take yourself out of their line of sight so that you are gone, they will quickly become distracted by something else. But it is heart-wrenching for the parent.
But you know, the parent leaves thinking that the child is going to spend the whole morning sobbing as they were when they left, and that just doesn't happen. They really do get over it quite quickly and start enjoying the day.
It's almost offensively quickly, I find, when it's my children who sometimes I've gone back and peeped through the window, which I know I shouldn't do with my teacher hat on, and they are so happy 30 seconds later having sort of sobbed on your leg. So it's unbelievably quick.
And presumably if your child is really traumatized by the fact you're not there, the teachers will get in touch. You know, they've got your number. If your child really is very, very, very distressed, they're not going to think, well, we're not going to let her know.
No, of course. And they'll talk about it. And if this goes on for longer, then the whole point is the teacher obviously doesn't want, you know, a distressed child. That child is not going to learn and is not going to have a wonderful time. So they will very much work with you in order to come up with solutions.
And is there anything you can do as a parent kind of going forward to sort of enrich the experience of school for them? I mean, what I suppose spring to mind is I've found it really beneficial getting involved in the school and sort of volunteering a bit of time to help set up bake sales and Christmas fairs and that kind of thing, and getting to know the school a little bit. But I think, you know, your children often see you involved in the school, and then it's like a sort of confirmation that it is something worth investing in.
Definitely. I mean, if your school, I mean, every school has a PTA, if you can contribute time to it, as you say, I mean,
PTA
means a parent teacher association, so whichever, they all have different acronyms. But if they can, if you can help with that, it's fantastic. They always need volunteers for trips. So if you can go on trips sometimes, that's incredibly helpful.
And the children love it.
And the children adore it if you're there. I mean, just fantastic. I also think if you can just always speak positively, even if you have a slight issue over something that the school has done, if you can never criticise the school or the teacher to your child, because the moment they see you losing faith with a school, they will pick up on it. So if there is any sort of issue there, if you have got a concern, obviously the first thing you do is go and ask if you can have a meeting with the teacher, but never talk in a negative way about the school to your child. Always be positive about it.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's really good advice.
And what about making new friends? Presumably that's also really important, just trying to find out from them which children they're enjoying hanging out with.
And from the teachers as well. Often yeah. The teachers will say, oh, so-and-so has been playing really nicely with this
exactly.
little girl.
And you can spot two characters that get on. If they've got similar interests, which won't necessarily be the child always, if your child's coming home and saying, oh, I really like someone, it might just be that that child's particularly loud or funny at that moment. Whereas a teacher might be able to say, well, actually, when they're playing, this person's a person they play really nicely with, as you've said. Yeah. And actually, then you can foster that through play dates or arranging to meet in a park or at a playground at a certain time. And often, as you completely said, those out-of-school experiences are really important for them.
And making friends, I guess, with other parents. Because I remember thinking, I've got plenty of friends, I don't need new friends. But actually, I've got to know a really nice group of parents through my children's school, just different people that you might not have come across socially anyway. And it's actually a really lovely opportunity to broaden your social circle.
Definitely. And as you go forward, you will be having similar concerns to them, because your friends from outside won't necessarily have children exactly the same age. But this way, as you go through, whether it's learning to read or the dreaded times tables later on, you're going through it at a similar time, and you can have that shared community and share those tips and hints.
Now, going forward, sort of within the sort of first few weeks, if your children or your child is thriving, that's all very easy, and it's very easy to be positive about the school and feel like you're being an amazing parent. You've kind of negotiated this whole process just perfectly. But what about parents who've got children that are just finding that transition a little bit more difficult, that are finding the whole process a bit more intimidating than they'd or you'd anticipated? How can you deal with that?
I think the most important thing here is working with the school. It's building up a really good relationship with the teacher. As teachers, we love talking to parents about it and working together, because that is the way that you're able to get the most for your child on their sort of educational journey. But I think what's particularly important there is it can be really difficult as a teacher. You know, you've got a parent who's just at the school gates going, oh, can I just have a minute to feel? And it's so hard, because invariably you're racing off to a curriculum meeting or a staff meeting, or there's something that you're meant to be doing. So if you've got a concern, just catch them, put a note in their book bag, or if you've got their email address, or however, you can ring the school office and just say, I've just got a concern. You know, can I see the teacher in the next couple of days, either before school or after school? I mean, obviously you need to be a bit flexible, because the teacher will always want to do it. And don't be put off from talking to your teacher if they can't meet you after school, because it's just because they're going to a meeting. But they will definitely, if you've got a concern, they will want to hear it. So just get, you know, grab them and schedule a meeting.
Because there is obviously a sort of settling in period where children are likely to be a bit more tearful and a bit less adjusted. What's normal and not normal in that sort of whole process? I know I'm kind of asking you quite a difficult question
The normal is such a difficult word, isn't it? Because sometimes they can settle in really easily, and then it comes up a month later. You know, almost the shininess and the excitement and the adrenaline has worn off. And actually, it's that realization they're about to have 14 years probably of going to school ahead of them. And then it can be a bit worrying then. So different children almost have those different anxieties at different times. So I think there's no such thing as normal. I mean, if after a month you have still got a child who is properly upset and clinging every morning, I would, you know, by then I'm sure you'll be starting talking to the teacher. And teachers come up with lots of different ways. It could be a sticker chart, a reward chart. It could be they need a specific job And actually, you probably come, a month seems like quite a long time. You know, you probably come to this earlier, but there might be a job. They might need to take the register in the morning. They might, you know, I had a child who always wanted to come sit beside me and we took the register as children came in. And therefore, as she, you know, then they took away the fear because she came straight in, she knew what she was doing. It wasn't this huge classroom, which she then had to choose something, select something to do. It was the fact that she knew exactly what she was doing. So it could be something as simple as knowing where you're going, but talk to the school because...
Or handing over to another adult almost. Exactly. So sometimes they need to go up a flight of stairs on their own when you say goodbye to them. And that's the scary part. Once they're in the classroom, they're okay. And the school might say, okay, fine, we'll get the teacher to meet you or someone to meet you at the door and take the child up for a couple of weeks while they settle in. That sort of thing.
Definitely.
Can make all the difference.
I mean, every type of issue like that has been dealt with before. And that's the nice thing, yeah. You know. And it's so difficult. Your child is not the first one to be feeling anxious about it. Mm. And the school have got so many ways they can deal with it. But the thing to do is talk and also just check, you know, at home, try not to make it too much of a big deal at home, the drop off point. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously if they're bringing it up a lot, talk about it, but just say, oh, you're doing brilliantly. It's so exciting. I hear you're being a superstar at school. I love how positive you are when I pick you up. It's just brilliant.
Yeah. And I guess to expect it to take time, you know, it's not, there's no quick fix to any of this. It's not like you suddenly think of something and then they skip into school happily ever after. These things that might well be the fix sometimes will take another month for them to work.
Definitely. I'm afraid it's a marathon, not a sprint.
And children are all different, and you'll find your first one might be super clingy, and then your next one runs in without a look back. That's quite common, isn't it, when the younger sibling so has seen the older one go to school for a few years before. So it's often easier.
Definitely.
And, you know, going forward in terms of schooling, I think one of the most important parts of education is obviously learning, but it's also developing relationships and being exposed to different personalities and, you know, how different people react in different situations. And on the plus side, it teaches you sort of resilience and it teaches you how to deal with different personalities, not just the people that find kind of communicating very easily. But, you know, and that there is an inevitable amount of sort of meanness in school. And when does that then turn into bullying? And if you're concerned about your child, how do you address that? At what point should you address that with the teacher?
I think the first really important thing is to listen to your children and really listen to what they're saying, because it's very easy for us with our adult hat on to put emotions into their heads, and sometimes they just need to be able to expressing it, and it might just be that they're offloading to you at the end of the day and someone said something that's not very nice, but it's not actually such a big deal. It's just a one-off. When it comes to bullying, the way I've always tended, and the school I've worked with has always tended to look at it, is it needs to be something that's repeated. Unless it is, if it's a one-off, but very, you know, nasty, if there's something that happened that's very physical, or there's a very nasty edge to something, or something you know is not right, go and talk to the teacher straight away. Just go straight in and talk to the teacher. If it's little niggles and something you just makes you just feel uncomfortable, you don't feel it's really awful, and it's happening repeatedly, so we're talking sort of more than 3+ times, then that's developing into a pattern and potential bullying, and then I would go and talk to a teacher. Also just talk to your child about how are they reacting to it. Are they, you know, trying to encourage them not to escalate it, and to see if you can sort it out. It feels very difficult because, as you say, you don't want your children to be exposed to anything. They have to learn how to problem solve themselves, and that is part of school, isn't it? Working out the right responses in those social situations when something's been said that you don't really like. If it is repeated, though, then definitely go straight into the school. The thing not to do is talk to the parents of the child, even if they are friends of yours. It's not worth it, because straight away you're taking it out of the teacher's control. This is happening in a school environment, and there you need to go through the teacher.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about, we did a guilt podcast recently, and we talked about the idea that, you know, so you feel guilty if your child is exposed to anything less than sort of perfect and happy and kindness, and you take it tremendously to your heart. Almost it's as if someone being mean to the child hurts the mother more than the child, because you love them so much and you want to experience as little kind of conflict in their life as possible. And yet there's an idea that this is really important thing to experience, because life, as we all know, contains some become mean people. We will always be exposed to people that say hurtful, nasty things that are just wrong. And if your child has never been exposed to that, then they never learn how to deal with it. So it sounds a bit cruel, but on the one hand, actually having that experience of imperfect behavior is a really important learning curve for your child.
And children can be mean, we all know that. And your own child, who you think is perfect and would never be mean, has probably been mean to someone at some point. And often school is the first time they are not under the direct supervision of their nursery teacher, which might be 1 to 5 children, is it, in nursery, where suddenly they could be 1 to 30 in their primary school environment. So children are a bit more left to their own devices. So there might be a group of 5 children all kind of having a conversation and a mean comment may be said, but that is part of development, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think you're completely right. We all hope that our children are perfectly behaved in all these ways, but they've got to learn their boundaries too, so that the odd mean thing will slip out from our children's mouths. And it's them also then learning that, as they've said, that they've then probably felt horrible about themselves afterwards, and that actually that friend then walked away and didn't want to play with them. And thank goodness that's happening in a reception or early primary school environment, as opposed to as a teenager, where it can then escalate hugely. It's such a learning time in terms of their social relationships and their interactions, and we can't get too involved. However, if something is making you feel uncomfortable, it's just so important that you go and talk to the teacher. And a lot of schools have behaviour mentors. A lot of schools have nurturing groups. They call them different things, but just things where they're encouraged, where they sit and we just practice saying nice things to each other. How does this make you feel? Every school will deal with a personal, social health and emotional, I think is the official name for it. But you're teaching them how to deal with those emotions, and you practice how to say something nice. How does this make you feel? How does it feel when someone says something less nice in a very controlled environment? And so that's all part of it as well.
And what language, if your child comes to you and says, Ella was really mean and said this to me today, I mean, what language do you use? You can't really turn around as a parent going, yeah, well, Ella's a bitch. You can't say that. How do you deal with it as a parent?
I think trying to separate what they've done from the person. You say that, oh, that's a real shame. How are you feeling right now? And they'll say, oh, I feel sad, or I feel cross, or however it is. And you say, well, I know that Ella is a kind little girl, even if she's not particularly, you think. But, you say, I know that Ella is a kind person, and she said something which was silly, hasn't she? And would you ever say something like that? They say, hopefully say no. You say, right, if this happens again, let me know. But we all say things sometimes that, I say things which I don't think are very nice. And I know you've said something sometimes what you think is very nice. Just try and be kind to Ella, and then hopefully she won't do it today. But just let me know if it happens again.
Yeah.
So very much keeping it an open space, a time that you want to talk about it. If it makes you feel better, I forget everything and I have to make lists of everything. Jot down exactly what they've said, because if in time you do want to go and talk to the teacher and you feel, then you can just say, I know it looks a bit silly, but I did just jot down that actually a couple of times over the past couple of weeks this has happened, and this is what this little girl has said to them, and this is the language that was used. Because also you won't remember the exact language, and you end up then putting a very adult sort of lean on it. So if you can, just note down what they say if you feel it's becoming a pattern, and then just go and talk to the teacher.
Iona, this is so useful. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. I kind of wish I'd listened to this, it's like 4 years ago now. I hope we've answered all your questions. If you want to hear a bit more about Iona's support network, you can follow her on Instagram. She's at educatewithiona. She does also workshops for parents, and her Instagram feed is packed with little fun games that will help your child develop the skills they need for school. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for downloading another episode of The Parenthood. Please continue to get in touch with us if there's anything specific that you'd like to talk about. You can get hold of us on Instagram, we're at theparent.hood, or you can email us at info@thebumpclass.com. And if you subscribe, rate and review The Parenthood wherever you get your podcasts, it makes it easier for people to find us. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, and from Iona, Kiara and me, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hold up. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.